The missing persons investigation into what happened to Sian O'Callaghan after she left a Swindon nightclub
is now a double murder investigation.
Earlier on today, they have confirmed two bodies.
One of them believed to be Sian O'Callaghan.
There's been a lot of activity here in Ashby Avenue this afternoon.
Police began searching a property belonging to a taxi driver arrested earlier on suspicion of kidnapping Sian.
Today, detectives investigating the murder of Sian O'Callaghan confirmed that a second set of human remains belonged to Rebecca Godden. She would have been 29 years old.
My daughter's been murdered.
Hi M&Ms, welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. Taxi drivers are meant to be trusted. We entrust these people with getting us to the correct destination on time and to ensure we arrive safely. Taxi drivers are used all over the world, and the ride-sharing industry has only grown in recent years with the invention of Uber. Whilst Uber drivers must pass a criminal background screening before being allowed to accept ride requests, recent research has indicated that local authorities are failing to keep accurate records of taxi drivers' criminal convictions. Swindon is a large town in Wiltshire, southwest England. It's a busy, bustling town where you can find the National Trust headquarters or Steam Museum. If you're travelling from Bath to London by train, you will more than likely pass through Swindon. Although it's a busy, popular town, over the years Swindon has garnered a rather negative reputation with a huge increase in crime. According to the crime map found at police.uk, in 2019 there were 24,415 crimes committed in Swindon, with 1,066 of those being burglaries, 475 being drug-related offences, and 6,266 of them being violent and/or sexual in nature. That's 25.665% of all crimes committed in 2019 being violent or sexual. Despite this high nature of burglaries and violent crimes, the 2011 census recorded the population as being 182,441, and I can only imagine that has increased over the years due to many new estates and houses being built. One of these 182,411 people was 22-year-old Sian O'Callaghan, who was described by her parents as an incredible, vibrant, beautiful girl. Sian was born on the 3rd of June 1988 to her parents Elaine and Mick O'Callaghan. She was the eldest of four children, with two brothers, Liam and Aidan, and one sister, Laura. Elaine described her as a happy child and recalled that Sian could quite often be found dancing to Craig David or Michael Jackson. When Sian completed her GCSEs, she tried to attend college, but it really wasn't for her, Elaine told The Sun back in 2016. So instead, Sian got an admin job and seemed to be really enjoying it. Elaine also recalls Sian as being a doting big sister, especially to Aidan, the youngest of the four. Quote, "She was a doting sister too, and like a second mother to her youngest brother Aidan. I'd often wake up in the morning to find him sleeping in her bed. I know she would have been a fantastic mother." End quote. Elaine treasured alone time with her eldest daughter, even though these were rare occurrences. Sian moved in with her boyfriend Kevin Reap in January 2011, so it's highly probable that Elaine got to see her even less. The last time Elaine spent alone time with Sian was just 2 weeks before she disappeared, although little did she know at the time that was the last time she'd ever see her friendly, caring daughter alive again. On the evening of the 19th of March 2011, Kevin and Sian both agreed to spend the evening separately. They'd been spending a lot of time together and had become so involved with each other since they began cohabiting and felt they were neglecting their friends. Sian got dressed up, did her makeup, and went on a bit of a pub crawl with some friends, before finally ending up in the Suji nightclub in Old Town. At 1:30 a.m, Sian was starting to miss Kevin, so she sent him a quick text to inquire as to where he was, but it would be several hours before Kevin saw and responded to this text. Just over an hour later, at 2:52 a.m, Sian was ready to call it a night and was seen on CCTV exiting the club, preparing to walk the half a mile to the couple's flat. It wouldn't be until 3:24 a.m. that Kevin would realise he had a text from Sian and replied to her, although it was impossible for him to know at the time that his girlfriend would never make it back to the flat they shared. When Kevin awoke the next morning and realised Sian had never made it home from a night out, panic set in and he phoned the police at 9:45 a.m. It was completely out of character for Sian to disappear. She was a family girl, she loved Kevin, and she had no reason to just walk away from her perfect life. Elaine recalls the day her daughter disappeared, which for her began with a panicked phone call from her eldest son Liam in an interview with The Sun in 2016. Quote, "He said Kevin was really worried because Sian didn't make it home the night before and wasn't answering her phone. Kevin had already phoned around hospitals and informed the police. At the time, I thought it was a bit of an overreaction and that she'd probably just crashed at a friend's house. When I returned home that afternoon, I found two uniformed police officers at my front door. They were asking if this was normal behaviour for Sian. Suddenly, it felt like things were escalating really quickly." End quote. As the sun began to fade on the evening and there was still no sign of Sian, no reassurance of her safety, Elaine's mind began to wander. Quote, "My mind was all over the place. I remember lying in the dark, unable to sleep, and just staring at the ceiling until the birds started singing." End quote. The police immediately realised the significance of Sian's disappearance and classified her as a level 1 missing person, which meant that they believed she was in immediate danger and that they would put all their efforts into locating Sian and bringing her home safely. Realising they required their best detectives working on this case if they were going to get any results, Detective Superintendent Steve Fulcher, one of the most highly respected and intelligent detectives at the time, became the lead investigator on the case. On the 20th of March, the police issued an appeal for any information that would lead to locating Sian, with a £20,000 reward being offered by an anonymous donor. And they also revealed that they'd begun searching Savanac Forest, with 400 members of the public joining the search. Two of Sian's friends were also involved in the search.
She's the nicest person you'll ever meet.
Yeah,
she has a big impact on everybody.
Everybody
if you
she
met
meets.
Her for 5 minutes.
Yeah. She's got such a widespread group of friends.
Sian's boyfriend Kevin also made an emotional public appeal for Sian's safe return.
"I just want to say how very worried we are about Sian. She's been missing now for over 2 days, and it's not like her not to come home."
On the 23rd of March, the police took a closer look at the CCTV from outside the Suju nightclub where Sian was last seen. It's not a very clear image as it's really dark and grainy, but it definitely shows Sian leaving the nightclub and walking in the direction of her home. The CCTV also revealed a car that was circling the area several times before stopping next to Sian at 2:57 a.m. The glare of the headlights makes it impossible to see the reason for the car stopping or what took place while it stopped, but when it pulled away, Sian was no longer visible on the CCTV. It was the police's belief that Sian got into the car, but for the time being, the reason behind her willingly entering the car would remain a mystery. The number plate of the mystery car was also obscured by the headlights, leaving police completely clueless as to what car they were looking for. Without this information, it would also be near impossible to find the individual driving the car unless they came forward. Whilst the CCTV didn't seem to lead anywhere for the time being, an analysis of Sian's phone records seemed to garner some more information about Sian's whereabouts after she left the nightclub. This analysis showed that Sian's phone first connected to a mast in Baden at 3:06 a.m. and then connected to a mast that covered Savernake Forest at 3:25 a.m. when she received Kevin's text. Sian's family insisted that she had no viable reason to venture that far out of Swindon, and that Sian not answering her phone was really unusual behaviour for her. Savernake Forest is a historic park in Marlborough, about 14 miles south of Swindon, and is extremely vast, covering 4,500 acres of land. Whilst helicopters with thermal imaging equipment were used to search the forest from above, police were extremely conscious of the fact that there was probably very little chance of locating Sian due to its size. However, despite the minute possibility of finding Sian using these helicopters, police knew the chance of finding her on foot were even less. Desperate for a new lead, police brought in an image analysis to scrutinise the CCTV further to see if they could get a clearer image of the car that was seen stop near Sian when she left the nightclub. From this analysis, the police finally gained some new information that may take the case in a new direction. The image analyst suggested that the car they were looking for was a dark-toned Toyota Avensis Estate that was made between 2003 and 2008. He also noted an area on one of the doors which appeared to be lighter than the rest of the car, and proposed it was possibly a sticker or an advert of some description. The real breakthrough, however, came when police noticed a police car driving in the opposite direction of the car they were looking for. Knowing the police car would have an ANPR, or automatic number plate recognition camera, on it, they analysed the recording provided by the camera, which revealed a dark coloured car with a minicab advert on the door for a taxi firm called Five Star. Finally, the police had a number plate and were able to identify the car as belonging to a local taxi driver called Christopher Halliwell. Christopher Halliwell was a divorced father of three who had previously spent time in prison in the 1980s for burglary. He ran his own taxi company, however this went bankrupt in 2010, forcing him back into working as a private taxi driver. DS Vulture initiated 24-hour surveillance on Christopher Halliwell to discern as to whether he would inadvertently lead them to Sian. The surveillance team observed as Halliwell cleaned the rear passenger seat of his car with chemicals before throwing the car seat covers into a wheelie bin across the other side of town. After cleaning out his car, Halliwell then burned an unknown material in the countryside, but after this, the surveillance crew lost him. The police decided to visit Halliwell at his home and took a DNA swab from his cheek. Primarily though, they were there to question him about his whereabouts on the morning Sian disappeared. Although I'm unsure what specific answers Halliwell gave to the police's questions, they did note that they were definitely inconsistent with the CCTV, which placed him and his car in Old Town. Alongside the inconsistencies in his answers, the officers also noticed that he seemed stressed and close to tears. DS Vulture used the media to attempt to trick Halliwell, issuing a press release stating that they were close to finding Sian and that they'd be continuing the search in the morning. However, Halliwell didn't fall into their trap and instead stayed home all night. DS Vulture was anxious that because Halliwell had seemed so agitated when they questioned him, that he may try and take his own life. The 24th of March is a really well-known day for this case. The surveillance team continued to watch Halliwell and followed him to Asda in North Swindon, where they learned that he'd bought an overdose quantity of paracetamol. The police observing Halliwell relayed this information to DS Vulture and almost confirmed his fear that Halliwell was going to make an attempt on his life, so he ordered the officers to arrest him there and then. Initially, Halliwell refused to cooperate with the police and requested to be taken to the police station to consult with a solicitor. However, Vulture had other ideas, and ignoring advice from several other officers, asked for Halliwell to be taken to Barbary Castle, about 11 miles south of the supermarket. Vulture later claimed that he was using emergency powers, which are mainly used when there's a threat to life. However, these powers are usually reserved for terrorist cases. Vulture failed to caution Halliwell for a second time, even though PACE, the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, dictates that he should have. Fulcher pressed Halliwell to reveal where Sian was located, and amazingly, Halliwell eventually asked if Fulcher had a car. Once in the car, Halliwell directed police to a roadside verge near Uffington in Oxfordshire, about 12 miles away from Barbary Castle. He told them that this was the location where he dumped Sian's body. Sure enough, police found the partially nude remains of Sian O'Callaghan. It was later revealed that she died as a result of several stab wounds to her head and neck. Elaine recalls that day, a day she will never forget for all the wrong reasons. Quote, "Some parts of that day are a blur, but I still remember exactly where the family liaison stood in the room when she told us the news. I can even recall what her hair was like. When she said they'd found Sian, I thought the next words would be, 'And she's alive.' I was willing them to come out of her mouth. But they didn't. I grabbed Liam and Laura and told them it was okay to cry now. It was like we'd been given permission to let go. Later, when everyone had left and I knew the family were asleep, I went downstairs and sobbed so hard I couldn't breathe." End quote. However, their day wasn't over. Halliwell then made another shocking confession that officers certainly weren't prepared for. Halliwell told the police and D.S. Fulcher that he'd killed years earlier and directed them to a field in Gloucestershire, 42 miles away from Uffington where Sian's body was found, and 36 miles away from Swindon. Here, he told police, was where they would unearth the body of the girl he'd murdered 8 years earlier. Pace rules suggest that Fulcher should have read Halliwell his rights 3 times that afternoon, but he knowingly failed to do so.
I personally was taken to 2 locations by this individual. One near Uffington, where we discovered the body of a woman who we believe is Sian, and also to another location near North Leech, where I believe a second body may be.
On the 25th of March, police discovered the remains of the second woman Halliwell directed them to in the field in Gloucestershire.
Since we spoke last, officers have began work to recover this second body, and this morning, officers have found remains which we believe to be human at the location at East Leech.
On the 28th of March, Halliwell appeared at Swindon Magistrates charged with Sian O'Callaghan's murder. On the 5th of April, the second woman's remains were identified as belonging to 20-year-old Becky Godden Edwards, who had been missing since January 2003. On the 31st of May 2012, Halliwell had a plea in case management hearing where he pleaded not guilty to Sian's murder. However, on the 19th of October, he appeared at Bristol Crown Court and this time pleaded guilty, sparing her family the nightmare of reliving their daughter's murder and facing her killer. Halliwell was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 25 years. However, as D.S. Fulcher failed to caution Halliwell 3 times, High Court Judge Mrs. Justice Cox ruled that Halliwell's confessions were inadmissible as evidence, meaning the charge for Becky's murder had to be dropped, for the time being. On the 23rd of January 2014, D.S. Fulcher was found guilty of gross misconduct and given a final written warning by the disciplinary tribunal. Although Fulcher was technically allowed to keep his job, in May 2014 he resigned from Wiltshire Police. Karen Edwards, Becky's mother, disputes this conviction and tells ITV that she believes Fulcher made the right decision for her and her family.
"I, to the day I die, will always be grateful for what he did. He made morally the right decision as a father, as a police officer, and he was just doing his job, and he has been punished for just doing his job."
Becky Codden Edwards was just 20 years old when she disappeared in January 2003. Her mum has since said in an interview that Becky was a really troubled child, falling in with a bad crowd in her teenage years and starting inhaling solvents before moving on to heroin.
Becky was a very beautiful, intelligent girl. She was my daughter. She was loved by all her family. As a teenager, she got involved with people who introduced her to drugs. She left school and her life spiraled. She told me one day she loved me so much. She couldn't keep putting me through this hell. And she was leaving and wouldn't come back to me until she was clean. I never saw her again.
Becky dropped out of school and her mum, Karen, spent all of her time attempting to help her young daughter beat her addiction. But time after time, she went back to the drug dens. Karen last saw Becky in 2002 when she drove her to see her boyfriend. But the last time Becky was seen alive was when her friends saw her getting into a taxi outside of a nightclub in early January 2003. However, Becky had gone missing so many times before that her family initially didn't think anything was out of the ordinary. They just assumed, as with every other time, that Becky would eventually return home. However, this time wasn't the same as every other time. Becky always remembered Mother's Day and birthdays, so when she didn't return for any of them, her family began to grow more and more suspicious of her whereabouts and safety. Despite her family's anxiety, it would be years before they reported her missing to police, partly due to the fact that there were apparent sightings of her by family members in Bristol, meaning police were unable to register her as a missing person. Alongside Becky's drug addiction, she was also a sex worker at the time of her disappearance, and Karen has since described Shan as the nice girl in the story and exclaims that Becky was essentially dismissed, which I have to assume was because of the drugs and prostitution, even though every missing person should matter, no matter their background or social status. Through her sex work, Becky had encounters with Halliwell, who turned to sex workers when his wife had their first child and became uninterested in sex. All we really know about Becky's murder is that sometime in January 2003, Halliwell had sex with Becky as he had done several times before. However, this encounter ended differently when he strangled her and buried her body in a field. As far as I can discern, the motive behind Becky's murder remains unknown. When a new detective was put on the case after Steve Fulcher resigned, evidence was discovered that authorised police to question Halliwell again, this time for Becky's murder. A former prostitute, known only as Miss X, informed police that Halliwell was besotted with Becky. Additionally, they found forensic evidence that linked a shovel found in Halliwell's shed in 2011 to the field Becky was buried in. On the 31st of March 2016, Halliwell was charged with Becky's murder, and on the 5th of September 2016, the trial commenced at Bristol Crown Court, where Halliwell chose to defend himself after firing his lawyers at the preliminary hearing. However, this would prove to be a fatal mistake, as Halliwell was not educated enough to defend himself, and the trial became an absolute shambles. He promised to tell the truth, but then proceeded to concoct a story whereby two drug dealers hired him to drive them around Swindon whilst they were delivering Class A drugs to their customers. He then stated that one night the two men put a sports bag in the boot of Halliwell's car and asked if he knew of a place where they could dispose of it, with Halliwell suggesting a field in Gloucestershire. As we know, this simply wasn't true, as Halliwell had already confessed to Becky's murder in 2011. On the 19th of September, unsurprisingly, Halliwell was found guilty of Becky's murder after the jury deliberated for only 2 hours. On the 23rd of September, Mr. Justice Griffith Williams sentenced Halliwell to a full life sentence.
We have waited over 5 years for this momentous day. It has been an extremely painful journey, but today we've received the justice that has felt like an eternity coming. for our beautiful little girl, Becky.
It's impossible to say exactly how many victims Christopher Halliwell had, but it's widely theorised that there are more victims than Sian and Becky. Many people believe that Halliwell is linked to the disappearance of Claudia Lawrence, and items removed from his home suggest he may have up to 60 victims.
Now, there have always been suspicions that the convicted double murderer, Christopher Halliwell, may have killed more than twice. Could there have been more young female victims in the 8 years between his first and his last known attacks? To try to find out, police have begun digging up the back garden of a house in Swindon where Halliwell used to live.
For more than a week, investigators thoroughly searched Halliwell's home in Swindon. They dug up the garden and ripped up the floors of the house, but the search came up empty. It's also since been revealed that he had an obsession with hardcore pornography, enjoying watching child abuse, violent sex, and rape. We may never know exactly how many victims he had, how many young girls who had their whole lives ahead of them and had those lives snatched away at the hands of Christopher Halliwell. It's highly probable that we will only find out the true number if Halliwell confesses to further murders. Sian's mother, Elaine, has started working very closely with the Susie Lampley Trust and has campaigned a lot over the last years for the implementation of stricter rules surrounding taxi drivers. Research Elaine undertook into taxi drivers all across the UK revealed that the majority of licensing authorities failed to keep an accessible record of drivers' criminal convictions, with a significant number of licensed taxi drivers having significant criminal records for crimes including actual bodily harm and common assault. The research also highlighted several drivers who had applied for or renewed their licences despite having criminal convictions within the previous 6 years. Rachel Griffin, the chief executive of the Susie Lampley Trust, stated, quote, "We are calling for legislative change to ensure that people are protected whilst using taxis and PHV. It is vital that they are all held accountable to rigorous national licensing standards. These regulations much prioritise passenger safety. Everyone who uses a taxi or PHV should be confident that their driver has been appropriately vetted and that they will reach their destination safely." End quote.
The devastating loss of Sian in such a brutal way is something that myself, my family, Kevin and everyone who knew Sian are learning to live with. Our lives have been changed forever as a result of a truly wonderful life being taken too soon. The overwhelming response and support continues to be of comfort to us and is great testament to Sian. She will continue to inspire and never be forgotten. As her mum, I want her to be remembered as the incredible person that she was. A heartfelt thank you to everyone for supporting and helping us get through this awful time. I would like to pay tribute to Sian's brothers and sister for their immense strength, conduct, composure, dignity and support throughout this immensely distressing time. Christopher Halliwell has, by his heinous actions, taken my vibrant daughter, young daughter's life and caused unimaginable distress. The sentence served today on Halliwell will not bring Sian back, but will mean he can't take any more. We will all endeavour to go on with our lives as Sian would have wanted. Our memories, along with her warmth and happy nature, will always be in our thoughts and hearts. That cannot be taken away from us or anyone who knew her, and we miss her.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.